The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Science's Lauren Schenkman is sitting in for David Grimm with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news from Science Now, Science's online daily news site, including a story about foster care for chimpanzees. When does this happen, Lauren?
Well, researchers have seen that in the wild, sometimes if a young chimp loses its mother, that another chimp, completely unrelated, or even male chimps who rarely do this, will take them under their wings. And these researchers studying these chimps for 3 decades in Côte d'Ivoire saw that in that time they saw 18 cases of adult chimps adopting motherless chimps.
And what constituted an adoption?
Well, in order to say that an older chimp had really adopted a young chimp, they had to, for 2 months, do things like, you know, not leave them behind when they're moving to a new location, or make sure they have enough food and carry them around on their backs. And these are things that usually only mother chimps will do. But the researchers saw that the adult chimps were doing this for from 3 months to more than 5 years. So that seemed to be a really strong sign that it was truly an adoption and it wasn't a sort of temporary helping out sort of thing.
And because it was in the wild, not in captivity, right? It's not as if they learned these behaviors from people.
That's right, because there had been previous studies where chimps would seem to help each other without there being any benefit to themselves. But researchers had said, well, maybe they learned these behaviors from humans. But when you're seeing it in the wild, it seems to make a strong case that, you know, this could actually be real. But a lot of researchers are still very doubtful about this.
And this is an example of altruism, or what explains this behavior?
Well, we think of altruism as being something that's uniquely human, but it really does appear to be happening here. I mean, some other researchers have argued that maybe there's a benefit to the foster parent, that maybe, you know, he gets groomed more often, or when time comes for conflict with other chimps, you know, he has someone else on his side. But the same thing can be said for when humans do altruistic things, you might say. But I guess this behavior could be because maybe the adult chimps mistake the young chimps for their own offspring. And that's what other researchers have suggested.
Okay. So what's next? What other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, I've got 2 more animal stories today. And the first one is about turkeys. And in this case, we're talking about how turkeys were tamed, specifically in North America. And people had thought that the Mesoamericans, these are people who lived in the area from Mexico to Honduras, brought domesticated turkeys to North America, along with other things like corn and beans. But it looks like that's probably not the case. It looks like Native Americans in the Southwest probably tamed turkeys on their own.
So how did they know that?
Well, they looked at DNA. They looked at 38 archaeological sites in the Southwest, and from those sites, they collected about 200 bones and coprolites. And coprolites is a fancy name for really old poop. And it turns out that this poop really preserves DNA enormously well. So they were able to look at the DNA from turkeys who were living at these sites and compare them to DNA from Mesoamerican turkeys, from samples that they had in the Smithsonian, and then compare them also to the turkeys that are in the grocery store and also wild turkeys from all over the U.S. And what they found is that you would expect these southwestern turkeys to be very closely related to the Mesoamerican wild turkeys if those people had brought the turkeys with them to the Southwest. But they really didn't have much in common. In fact, the turkeys that the southwestern Native Americans had raised, they were really similar to wild turkeys found in the East Coast and in the Midwest, genetically. So it looks like those southwestern Native Americans might have gone east and gotten those turkeys and brought them back home.
Why would they do that?
Well, researchers speculate that it could have been because of their superior feathers. Around this time in the archaeological sites, it looks like rabbit fur blankets were being replaced by turkey feather blankets. So that could be one reason.
And which are the ones, the Mesoamerican turkeys or the ones that were domesticated by the southwestern Native Americans? Which of those are the ones that we eat now?
Well, it's kind of a roundabout story. It turns out that the turkeys we eat today were taken from Mesoamerica by the Spaniards in the 16th century to Spain. and then brought back 100 years later as a food source. And so the descendants of those turkeys are pretty much what you buy at the supermarket. Now, this is a surprise in and of itself, but the real surprise in this story is the connection between the Southwest Americans and the East, because there's so many connections between the Southwestern Native Americans and the Mesoamericans, and not so many between those Southwestern Native Americans and the East Coast.
Okay, so last story. What's this last animal story about?
Well, you've heard of the Human Genome Project, but you may not have heard of the Horse Genome Project to map out the genes of horses. And just recently, a new company rolled out a DNA test for horses, and it costs 1,000 euros, and it can tell you something that racehorse breeders really want to know, which is whether their horse is likely to be a good sprinter or more of an endurance runner.
What are they testing for? Is it localizing performance to one gene?
Well, yes, according to the company. There was research published just last month that showed that there was one gene that had two variants, and one variant was correlated with horses who were likely to win races of up to 1.3 kilometers, so short races. And then there was another variant that was correlated with horses who did better in races of about twice that. So the idea is that if horses have this one variant, they have these compact muscles that are better for sprinting. And if they have the second variant, they're more naturally suited for endurance running. But, you know, they're saying this based on research that showed a correlation, and there's a lot of other things that come into account, a lot of other variants of genes. And there's also genes for things like aerobic capacity that the researchers haven't teased out the genetic components to yet. And that could also be really important when you're trying to predict whether a horse is going to win a race. So early days for this kind of research.
Okay, well, thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Rob.
Science's Lauren Schenkman sitting in for David Graham with a wrap-up of some stories from Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the science policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.